as your code base gets bigger and bigger, it becomes more and more important that you have conventions and you have oversight over how things are implemented so they're done correctly, but also so maintenance is easier. But as your code base gets bigger and bigger, that becomes a bigger and bigger challenge to be able to do and do correctly until now. That's this episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and I'm here with Sri and Anthony. They're both on the managed language team working on analyzers. Do you know what an analyzer is? You will when this is over. But before we do, let's start talking and figure out who these guys are. Anthony, let's start with you. Who are you? You've been on the show before. Let me just say welcome back. But for anybody who may not remember, who are you?
It's good to be back. As you mentioned, I'm Anthony Green. I'm a program manager on the managed languages team here at Microsoft. So that's the team that makes the Visual Basic and C# and F# programming languages. I'm also responsible for the Roslyn project and other things. And part of the Roslyn project is the set of code analysis APIs, and .NET analyzers is sort of at the pinnacle of that. A technology that we're putting out that allows you to extend the Visual Basic and C# compiler with your own custom analysis that can provide rules and diagnostics and things. So if you're thinking of things like StyleCop or FXCop, anything where you want to, you know, add a squiggle and kind of enforce some best practice on a code base, this is a mechanism that makes that really simple to do.
I am so excited. Okay, I love the idea of .NET analyzers. Let's not go into it yet. Sri, tell us who you are. You're on the same team?
Yeah, I'm on the same team. I'm a dev lead on the team. I've been with Microsoft for about 10 years now. I think I'm actually coming up on 10 years now.
Wow.
So working on analyzers for the past 2 years now, I think. Yeah.
What do you get at 10 years? You get a watch, like a Microsoft band?
There's like this crystal, and it's like you have to lug it around, and it's actually pretty heavy or something like that.
It's going to be great. I wonder how much of the building weight is accounted to just from all these crystals that are laying around. You see them everywhere, right, as you walk, especially like in research or something like that, where these guys have been around for a million years, it seems like. They've got all these different colored crystals. Well, congratulations when it comes, I suppose. All right, Sri, I'm going to have you start. We know that these are .NET analyzers. It's possible that nobody has a clue what we're even talking about.
Right.
I'm excited about it because I've been a dev lead on teams as well, where things go crazy, right? Every dev has their own style. Every dev has their own approach. Right. And analyzers are so much more than FXCop, right?
Right. Yep. The code idea is... Visual Studio has always had what people have been calling IntelliSense builds, right? Live analysis. So as you type, you get the errors immediately and the feedback, the loop is there and it's instantaneous. And that's nice, but the errors that we've had are only the compiler errors, right? If you leave out a semicolon, it tells you. But if you are using an API incorrectly, right, the compiler has no clue, right? As long as
compiles, yeah.
Exactly. And in a lot of these cases, you do want that kind of feedback a lot more, right? Because you're like, I just got this NuGet package that tells me how to use some particular API. Like I got this, I don't know, JSON package or something. Like which API should I call? And a lot of people just use IntelliSense and things like that. They're guided by that. And as soon as they call the API, though, they're like, oh, okay, now am I doing this the right way? Like what is the order in which I should be calling these methods, et cetera, et cetera. And typically, API authors have had the ability to give guidance through just XML doc commons and things like those, right? And hope that people read them.
Right.
So what we're adding here is the ability for people to run as part of the compiler and issue errors and warnings as part of the compiler.
Okay, So wait, let me make sure we're together here. So every developer already has static analysis, right? Where the compiler is running behind the scenes all the time against your code. Every change you make, it tells you if there's a problem or not. So that's super valuable. Mm-hmm. But now you go to NuGet. and you download a new library that does some magical something or other. Right. And in order to know how to use that, I have a couple options. I could go to their website. I could read all their documentation. They might even ship a couple comments that I would probably quickly delete, right, inside their sample code or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's really no mechanism to say for the author to say, you're doing it right, or even probably better, you're doing it wrong. You don't get an error message that says you're doing it right, probably.
Yep. And that's really the experience that we're trying to ship here is you get a NuGet package, and NuGet packages come with the actual references that you're going to be building against, but it'll also come with these components called analyzers, and they become part of your project, right? Uh-huh. And so they travel with your project, and it's not just Visual Studio. So if you're building in the command line, you're just using MS Build. These analyzers get run as part of the build as well.
Oh, okay. Oh, so I could make this part of my gated check-in process in TFS.
Exactly. Yeah. And so if you have even things like style guidelines and things like that, right? So you could, if you have like a team policy of the things that the style guidelines that you want to enforce, you could write analyzers for those and add them to your project. And as you're typing in the IDE, you would get those issues reported to you. And you can also have fixes associated with those analyzers, which would automatically fix those issues.
Right? So it's not just you got it wrong. It's also a right-click, and I'll give you some suggestions on how to do it better.
Exactly. Yeah.
All in the context of what you're actually doing. So if you needed to reference a class or something like that, it's going to know your namespaces and do it all properly. Like the refactoring stuff we've been used to all along, now it's just extended so that these authors of these libraries or whatever, they can start leveraging it as well. Mm-hmm. Anthony, we've had FXCOP and we've had code analysis in Visual Studio. Why do we need a third technology?
Well, the kind of benefit of this is really unifying more than it is making an extra thing. As Sri mentioned, there are kind of compiler errors before, and that's something Visual Studio understands very well. Visual Studio would surface those in the error list. It would give you squiggles in the IDE, and even in Visual Basic, for example, there was a mechanism for these quick fixes that have existed that the IDE team wrote that specifically address compiler errors. And so there's this whole pipeline of things that was restricted, and then code analysis and FXCOP was sort of next to that. The live analysis for the languages would run regardless of whether your project would build or not, so that you constantly get that feedback, and other tools were relegated to running after the build. And so there'd kind of be a long wait before those things happen, and you couldn't get that guidance until your project was in a consistent state. We've actually invented something that unifies all of those experiences, and so now FXCOP and static analysis get the same first-class treatment and the first-class integration into the Visual Studio experience as the compiler. So that's the really exciting thing.
Is this like putting to bed then code analysis and FXCOP? This is the superseding thing that replaces it all? Or do they all work together? How does it work?
They all work together, right? One other interesting difference is, if you think of FXCOP actually does binary analysis, right? So once your build is done, it goes and analyzes the binary. Whereas with Roslyn and with analyzers here, we are actually doing analysis of the source itself, right? And it has its advantages and disadvantages. So the classic example we talked about is if you have an async method, for example, the compiler does a bunch of transformations on the async method, so that by the time it gets to the binary, the IL, it looks nothing like the original async method, right? And so when FXCOP looks at it, it doesn't know that it was an async method, and so there's rules like there's a code analysis rule that says don't use too many locals because the JIT doesn't like it, and if you write a simple async method, that rule already fires because FXCOP thinks that the compiler just put in so many locals in there that it triggers that rule. So you also get a sort of a higher fidelity of analysis as you're doing source analysis. Now, of course, there are some cases where binary analysis is better and it's complementary. And so I wouldn't call this technology as replacing that. But you can think of it as there is a Visual Studio code analysis experience, and it is powered by two separate engines, one that's live and on source, and one that's based on the binaries that are being built. And that's it's an implementation detail, right? So,
let me make sure I've got my head wrapped around it. So, FXConf is still valuable, obviously, the way you're describing it, because not only does it have what it's already had, but it also does things against binaries. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the productivity experience for the developer in the IDE, right? So we were talking earlier about IntelliSense, and that's a static experience, right? It's happening all the time behind the scenes. You don't know it. This is a static experience too, then. I get the squiggles and all of those sort of things. I don't need to say F5 or F6 first, right?
Correct. Yeah, it happens as you're typing, and you don't need to take any actions. And you get those issues and the fixes offered to you as you're typing.
I've written FXConf rules before, and Sri, let me be honest with you, that's not an easy task, right? I mean, that's an uphill challenge when you have a lot of those. What's the developer experience for creating these analyzers as well? Does it feel about the same?
I hope not. I hope it's much easier than the FXConf rules that you had to write. One of the things we used to say, or we still say, is these are extensions to the compiler, and you're analyzing source, and it's sort of you're doing compilery things, right? But you shouldn't have to be a compiler writer to write these things. And so we do have, it's a very simple callback model where so you tell the compiler, I am interested in these kinds of expressions and symbols, and the compiler calls you back when it sees those things, and then you do your analysis on top of that using the ROSN APIs.
Now, you said it ships with my application. Does the footprint of my application get bigger because it has rules in it now, or does it not ship, does it not build into it, or you tell me?
It's used to analyze your application, but when you build, this is not part of that, right?
So I see.
This is a build-only artifact. It's not a runtime artifact, which means when you deploy your application, the analyzer is not around.
Those rules are, I put them all in source control. They're shipped, or they're not shipped, but they're part of the solution. I see them as, is it another project or just a loose files in the solution?
It's a binary. So an analyzer is just another DLL, like a reference DLL. And so your project, as it references a DLL for building itself, it would reference an analyzer as a build-time artifact.
Yeah, that makes plenty of sense. There's tons of rules already shipping with FXConf. Can I assume all of those rules are going to be part now of the Microsoft Analyzer Library or something like that?
So we've taken a look at all the FXConf rules and sort of identified about 100 or so, which we think are valuable, and we've started porting those to this framework. Over a period of time, yes, we will port as much as makes sense over.
Even introduce some new things as well.
Absolutely.
That FXConf's, honestly, it sounds like this is going to be able to accomplish things that FXConf really couldn't do. It can even do more than FXConf could accomplish, looking just at a binary.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And we do. Yes. Absolutely. As we add more new language features. As new platforms come online, as new APIs are getting added, we would sort of add more of these analyzers.
So this is just a binary. I'm writing them in C#.
Yep.
That's great.
In C# or Visual Basic, either of them.
And so this is a binary I could share across all my solutions in my entire company if I wanted to make sure everybody had the same sort of thing. And what kind of things can I check? So we know that it can do more than FXConf, but what kind of things can I check? Let me ask you. Like casing and documentation and looking for security things like literal strings or what are some great use cases? You tell me.
By saying absolutely to all of those things, looking for casing or particular usage patterns in APIs. So, for instance, if you wanted to analyze all of the connection string initialization for some data object, you could totally check those to see if they're literals and that they're not embedding security information. One rule that we've talked a lot about now that we have the string interpolation feature that we're adding to C# and Visual Basic in this next release is we need an analyzer that goes and makes sure that you don't abuse that by using the string interpolation feature to take user input and inject that into a SQL query, because that's going to make yourself even more vulnerable to SQL injection attacks. And so now we have this way of of a filter balancing out the value of language features by providing guidance to make sure you use them correctly and don't use them incorrectly. So this is exactly that. Those are exactly the types of use cases that spring to mind for us as well.
Anthony, do I have the same flexibility as I did with FXCup, where I could mark them to say this is going to cause a build error? This is just going to be some sort of warning to the user?
Yes, you have the same flexibility of saying kind of what the default severity is, and the user also has then control to elevate it or completely suppress it. So if they want to say, hey, you know, I believe that using the one true brace style should be an error, and that anyone on this project that violates that should not be able to check in, then you totally have the capacity to do that as the user has that control. But you could also go in and say, I think that this should be an error level severity to begin with, and should be on by default as the author.
I could create a rule that says you can't use the suppress keyword.
Well, you can. and the other thing we've done with this is, like Anthony mentioned, merging of things. So an issue produced by the compiler is the same at the lowest level as an issue produced by one of these analyzers. And so if an analyzer says something's an error, we won't output the binary, right? It breaks the build. And just like you can make compiler errors, you know, we have one is error and all of those things, all of the same mechanisms apply to this. The way you suppress compiler errors is the same as the way you suppress these analyzer errors.
I see. That makes sense. That makes sense a lot. All right. So what's the experience for a developer? I have a handful of custom FXCOMP rules that we've been using in our enterprise for a long time, let's pretend, right? And I need to port those over. It's not a one-to-one port by any means. There's probably not really a port at all. This is going to be a rethinking of the way these rules work?
Yes, to an extent, yes. A lot of the FXCOMP rules, they act at sort of a symbol level, so to speak, right? They're about a type or a method or those kinds of things. And we do have symbol analyzers, right? So you could tell the compiler, I'm interested in this type or method. And so as we've been porting the FXCOMP rules, for a lot of them, the port was actually surprisingly straightforward.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And there are some where you're actually doing analysis of method bodies and things like that. And in those cases, it becomes more complicated. I wouldn't say complicated. It becomes different, right? The way the FXCOMP rule is different from the way you would write ROSN analyzers. But it would be take that scenario and try to implement it in this world.
I imagine after you've written two or three of them, you're starting to knock them out pretty fast, and you can really start pretty much understand the new paradigm around it. Tell me, Sri, what's your favorite rule that you like? Have you started introducing new rules, and you have a rule you're kind of fond of?
There's this one. So we as on the Roslyn team, on the managed languages team, as we're working on the Roslyn project, and we find things, you know, during code reviews or things like that, we always add an analyzer for it, and that becomes part of our build. So that so that the next time you don't have to give that comment in the code review, right? So you just You're told as the mistake gets pointed out to you as you make it, instead of having to wait for the code review.
So So you see an error or something you've done wrong through a code review process. Not mm-hmm. only do you fix it, but part of your workflow is then you also create an analyzer that you include for later. So then you may have in code review found it in one class.
Yeah,
but that analyzer might actually find it in three other classes where nobody's actually reviewed it yet.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, and that's brilliant.
Yeah. And so for example, we've had some code review comments about, you know, you should, as you're using some certain collection classes, you know, you should probably not be using that because it creates more allocations, and in our scenario, it's not good.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, there was a code review comment that was given a few times. And then that person said, oh, I might as well just write an analyzer for it. They wrote it. And then from then on, they just, you know, everybody who's writing that kind of code gets told that they should be doing that.
That is awesome. What a great idea.
That is my favorite workflow, yes.
Yeah, that's terrific. Anthony, help me figure out where I can use this. Which languages can I use? Is this an enterprise feature of Visual Studio? You tell me.
So this applies to, at the moment, Visual Basic and C#. And the rules that you write, you know, there are the sort of symbolic, the symbol level ones that work immediately kind of for both because they're working across the common sort of language abstraction. And then there are ones like StyleCop, you know, that are more particular to the semantics of each language that'll impact those. But so those are the two customer kind of segments that can take benefit from it. As for, you know, Visual Studio, this is actually not coupled with Visual Studio directly.
Okay.
These rules run as part of the compiler, and so they'll run on your build server. They'll run wherever you're building things as long as the compiler is driving them through that infrastructure. So that means any version of Visual Studio, the Express editions, the community editions, Ultimate Professional, you can use these. And because they're distributed through NuGet, you know, that's the one mechanism that you can use to acquire them. So you don't even have to worry about thinking of them as add-ins to Visual Studio. I mean, there's a V6 model, but because they're NuGet, they work with any version, any edition.
Is there anything that developers need to worry about around performance? Like if they have, you know, if I have 1,000 rules, is that a little bit too many rules, or is that what you would expect? What if your testing kind of revealed?
So one thing we've done is the specific reason why the analyzer API is a callback model is because these analyzers get run during compilation. So when the compiler looks at a particular piece of code and it analyzes it, it then calls you with the context in place, right? So all of the internal data structures are live and it calls you. And that really is targeted towards the scenario. If you have a lot of these analyzers running, you know, live, and you don't want them to be reanalyzing every single time, and that would, you know, cause problems. And so, yeah, it is geared towards that. Of course, you could write complicated. You could, you know, as part of your analysis, you make a web service call or something like that, or you go reach out in your database.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's going to, you know, slow things down. But for the most part, we have about, you know, about 40, 45 analyzers running as part of our solution. And we hardly notice any difference in the development experience. And while building, there is, of course, a throughput difference. There's, you know, it's about like a 20-30% hit extra time that it takes to run these analyzers. But it is very scalable in terms of, you know, what, how many analyzers you want. And you know, it's sort of like pay for play. As you add more, and you get more.
These are all asynchronous, right? It's not like they are causing anything to slow down or anything like that. They're happening in the background the entire time.
They're all happening in the background as you type.
And you've managed to categorize them. So if I create a new rule, a new analyzer, sorry, I also say I only care about these sorts of things. So that also means that maybe not every analyzer is running all the time anyway, because what it's analyzing doesn't have anything to do with that.
Sure. Yep. And we're also intelligent in the IDE about what exactly gets analyzed. And so if you're editing a file or inside a method body, and we know that, you know, these other projects have no dependency on this type or file or method body, then we would not analyze those. We would just reuse the results from them. And so we would incrementally analyze in the IDE as well. And that leads to...
Well, obviously, if I put it in code behind, I would be able to use an analyzer. But I guess XAML markup isn't a candidate for these code analyzers, because it's not code, is it? It's just the declarative markup.
It's not, yes. And today, because this is based on Roslyn and source analysis, it only can analyze C# and VB source.
Yeah.
Now, if we extend the Roslyn model to make XAML a Roslyn language, for example, then this could extend to that. But that's...
Well, who knows?
Thing in itself, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool. Don't you anticipate, Anthony, don't you anticipate that there's going to be a lot of third parties out there releasing tons of NuGet packages that say, here's the perfect XYZ type project set of analyzers that you can include, or like the Infragistics team might send out, here, if you're going to use our charting tools, here's our analyzers you can use to make sure you're doing them properly. Don't you expect for the ecosystem to kind of blossom up and create a lot of these?
Not only do we expect it, we're counting on it. Like, you know, building this thing really significantly lowers the bar of entry for people to build these great experiences that extend Visual Studio for their developer. You know, writing one of these rules, once you get used to it, becomes fairly natural once you understand how Roslyn works, because the structures that you're kind of using are all in terms you're already familiar with. You know, once you understand Roslyn's concept of a class declaration or an if statement or whatever, those are in C-sharp terms or VB terms, as opposed to sort of FXCOP, which has its own abstraction. So you're already C-sharp developers just learning about how to analyze your own language in terms of your own language. Putting that there means that many, many more people in the ecosystem are going to be able to do this without making huge investments in their own analysis engines and kind of repeating all the work that we do every release. And we absolutely want everybody who's putting out kind of NuGet libraries, you know, Newtonsoft, JSON, or Infragistics, or Telerik, or any of these big names to go out and certainly distribute theirs with the best practices as they come up with them for using their libraries.
That makes sense to me. And what a beautiful thing. And the fact that it's simpler now to do and it could become just a natural part of your workflow as well. Perfect. All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate you coming on and talking about this. I think there's been a lot of buzz around this because it's been one of the neater features that Roslyn has kind of unlocked, you know, one of those things that now developers can do. We've always had this idea of, you know, we've had contracts in the past where that was a type of static analysis, but nothing like what you're talking about. So now we have a combination of both code analysis to make sure that the code is implemented in a way that makes sense, but also kind of a style analysis as well to make sure from developer to developer there's at least a consistency between the everybody on the team so that maintenance becomes easier as well. All right, perfect. Guys, I love it a lot. I can't wait to see it. Can't wait to start playing with it myself. Thanks for being on the show. Sri, Anthony, thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.